6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very, very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. As always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's newbees.com. Today, I want to send a special thank you to Semisonic for Closing Time. That is the warm-up song of the day from 1998. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. All right. So, welcome back. I hope your bee season's going great. Your bees are not swarming on you. You're catching swarms in the swarm traps like somebody mentioned in the Discord room the other day. Congratulations. As always, you can check things out at beekeepingfornewbies.com. Got a lot of information in there. We got some downloads, some plans for different things. Link to the Discord room is there as well. You can also check out bestbeekeepinggear.com. And if you're a Pinterest fan, we have the articles on bestbeekeepinggear.com are now pinned. There's about 20 of them there, so you can go there and go read up on some different beekeeping tasks, how-tos, and other things. But before I roll in here too far, I want to send a thank you to all of you because we've just hit that five-year point here with the podcast. Obviously, you know, we've got over 500,000 downloads, over 450 Discord members. This week, we hit a new all-time daily high for most downloads in a day. And then 2 days later, we beat that. We're also approaching our biggest 30 days of downloads ever with a 50% increase over where we were at the peak last year. So thank you, thank you, thank you to all of you for listening, for your support, for being a part of our online community, sharing your stories, pictures. I truly feel very blessed to be able to serve all of you, and I appreciate the opportunity. Okay, so let's get to work. I did a video yesterday on doing a mock inspection. Now, my idea with this is I think back to the Army days, and I remember when we were training, we would do things sometimes where, like, it was just like us with a firearm and no ammunition, and we would literally be walking. Like, we would just be walking through certain scenarios and pointing at different things and looking at different things, and we would call that, like, 25% speed or at a slower speed. We were trying to build the operation out physically by doing things, but doing it really slow. And then we started doing things faster. And then we started incorporating, you know, dummy ammunition or blanks, things that would go pop, but didn't actually hurt anything. And we kept building up to the point where you were then in a live fire kind of scenario. By the time you got to that live fire portion, you had already done everything in that scenario 50 times. My thought with this is, you know, we used to always say train as you fight. Now, obviously, you don't want to go at your bees with an aggressive attitude and, you know, want to attack them or hurt them. But I'm speaking specifically about the act of doing inspections. The more you do them, they will become second nature. You'll walk up to the hive, you'll start smoking, you'll be doing things. You can be talking, carry on a conversation, and you don't have to think or pay attention. Your body's on autopilot because you've made this muscle memory. This is why I think mock inspections are valuable. You get all of your gear together, you go out there, you're practicing where you're going to stand, how you're going to do things, you're practicing using a smoker. If you want to, you can even practice lighting the smoker. You're practicing getting the feel for the hive tool, the dexterity or lack thereof that you have wearing gloves. And you'll get a chance to see what that's like firsthand and to see why you hear me say, hey, when you can get away from the gloves, it's a really great idea. You'll have better dexterity. Now you're going to know. You can go through all of these things over and over again. It doesn't cost you any money. You can do it all day, every day if you want. You can make as many mistakes as you want because there's no bees that are going to be hurt. You're not going to be punished by the bees for making mistakes. You can start to kind of just get a feel for what you have to have, how you have to do it. And you might do three or four of them and say, geez, you know, this might be a lot easier if I get a yard cart so I can put all my stuff in this little cart, or maybe a bucket. You know, you can just carry all your stuff around in a bucket, have the smoker hanging off the side of the bucket, or a small like carpenter's box. Or, you know, this just gives you a chance to kind of get a feel for what it's like to stand outside in your yard on a hot, you know, hot sunny day with all your gear on. So check out the video. It's on YouTube. I was getting attacked by wasps. I think there were about a half dozen wasps out there that were just harassing me because I set up a couple of these hives to see if this was an area I wanted to have them near my garden and in my yard. And I thought, well, I'll just put them in this area and see if this is going to be good with the mower and trimming around them and everything. And it's good to kind of do some demonstration for video purposes. So I thought, well, we'll just leave them there. Well, I left them unattended. And I think three of them have wasps in them, so I got to deal with that. But that's fun if you want to get a good laugh at my expense. Okay, so today we're going to talk about understanding mostly bee behavior. I do want to cover the roles as well so that you understand like what each bee type is. I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't think we've talked a lot about it. We just kind of make this assumption that, well, you're a new beekeeper. I'm sure you know what the bees are. So we'll just kind of go through real briefly. We're going to talk about the different, what they call castes of bees. So we'll talk about the, you know, the worker, the drone, the queen, and what their roles are. We'll go through all that as well. But primarily, I really want to focus on you being able to understand general bee behavior so that it makes it easier for you to operate more efficiently and effectively and in a way that minimizes disruption to the bees. The less disrupted or agitated that they are, the less likely they are to want to lash out at you or seek you out for some sort of retribution for any actions you may have performed. A lot of the mistakes that happen with beekeeping are from a misinterpretation of what's being seen. So a lot of times a beekeeper will see, for example, well, this colony has no eggs. I've got to be queenless. You may be in a dearth and the nurse bees aren't raising any more brood and they're cannibalizing the eggs. So you just don't see new eggs, right? It's things like that that is just a misinterpretation of what's actually going on. Or another example might be, well, I was going to do an inspection, but I walked by and they were bringing pollen in and, you know, the pollen sacks were loaded down. So, I mean, as long as they're bringing in pollen, everything's fine. You can have a queenless colony that still has foragers out bringing back food. Now, things tend to be a bit more disrupted. They're not as organized. They're obviously not raising brood. Queen pheromones not present in a scenario where they would be queenless. So things aren't okay. But you don't see that from the outside. And I think that's why it's important to just, like I said, we'll level set everything with the roles of all the bees first. And then we'll dive in and start talking about the specifics of different pheromones and all that. Okay, so workers. All of the workers are females. They do everything in the colony. They are responsible for raising brood, making wax, storing, you know, nectar and making honey and guarding and foraging. They literally do everything in the hive. Every worker starts out as a nurse bee. She'll graduate up into other roles, you know, between, cleaning, wax generation, guarding, and then ultimately going to foraging. And once she becomes a forager, she's somewhere in that like 7 to 14 day range of life. She doesn't have a whole lot of time left once she becomes a forager. So drones are the males. They don't do anything. Like, they literally have a single one purpose in life, and that is for mating. They don't forage. They don't defend. Like, the hive can be getting attacked, and they're like, oh, well, this kind of stinks. I better get out of here. Like, they literally do nothing. What you will typically see is when there is a spring ramp up, the colony recognizes that with all these resources coming in, there may be a need to swarm. The queen will start laying some drone eggs as well so they can raise some drones. Now, the drones, this is kind of a common misunderstanding. The drones that are in the hive with your queen, those drones will not mate with your queen. There is a very high possibility, maybe even a probability, that the drones in your apiary or even your neighborhood or, you know, your neighbors, your queen may not even mate with them. When she goes out on her mating flight, she will naturally go out further and beyond their range to hopefully expand her genetic diversity by finding drones from other areas. So I think that's really a kind of a neat thing that's built into the DNA and how the hardwired behavior of honeybees. So a drone literally just goes around and tries to hang out in what they call drone congregating areas, hoping a virgin queen comes by, hoping he has a chance to mate with her. And if he does, great, he's dead. And if he doesn't, he just dies of old age. And of course, most drones do not ever actually get a chance to mate, and most of them end up dying, having never had that experience. Okay, lastly, and arguably the most important, is the queen. She has pretty much two primary roles as I see it: laying eggs and putting off queen pheromone. That queen pheromone is what brings and keeps everything else in balance. And what I'm going to do, we're going to do a separate episode, maybe next week, just talking all about pheromones, because it's all of this pheromonal activity. It's really, really fascinating. Like, if you are a person who gets kind of geeked out by science and likes to dig deep into these things, it's pretty fascinating the way that all of these chemical pheromones and these scents and signatures all tie in together to make the colony operate like this well-oiled machine. It's really, really fascinating. But laying eggs and queen pheromone, that's pretty much what she does. She doesn't actually rule over anything. She doesn't run around and micromanage anything. She just puts out the pheromone and everything else kind of runs from there. Now, on a slightly, you know, different discussion, we've talked a lot about in the past with supersedure and different types of cells that you may see. When that queen starts to fail, that's when things become interesting, because then that pheromone's not as strong and it doesn't create the same response from the workers that it does when she is strong and when things are going well, which, you know, would ultimately lead to supersedure or, you know, her replacement in some way. But it's a very different mood and overall function in the hive when that queen's not functioning properly. So now that we know who's doing what, let's talk just briefly about a couple of these pheromones. We know that they're communicating via pheromone. There's arguably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 30 plus different pheromones. Some of those are kind of a combination of different types of chemicals that come together. For example, I think like queen pheromones, a combination of like 6 or 7 different kind of chemicals, which again, we'll discuss that later on. But the things that you're going to want to know about and pay attention to, in my opinion, one of the most important ones is the alarm pheromone. So when you're doing your inspections, a lot of people will tell you that when they're releasing alarm pheromone, that there's a banana smell. Now, I don't know if my sense of smell is just destroyed from whatever junk I've been exposed to in my life, or I've never smelled that. At one point, somebody had made that comment, and I, being the smart butt that I am, I was like, I don't know, I'll eat a banana in the bee yard next time I'm out there, and we'll see what they do. I literally walked around the hive with a banana in my hand, eating it. They didn't seem aggressive towards me, so I don't smell that myself. I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just saying that I can't smell it. But if you smell a banana-like smell, that would be the alarm pheromone. The other ones I think are really important are brood pheromone, which brood pheromone, the absence of that, particularly on a flow when you have a whole lot of resources coming in, the absence of brood pheromone tells them they're running out of brood space, which then kind of kicks things in for swarming. And then forager pheromone, as forager pheromone decreases, that tells other workers within the hive, hey, it's time for you to graduate up to replace them. but all of them play a vital role. And this is one of the reasons that we're using smoke. We use the smoke to mask the pheromone and kind of calm the bees down. Now, some people have said, oh yeah, you give them so much smoke that they become hypoxic. They don't get enough oxygen. That's why you do it. And I'm like, well, I don't think there's a lot of evidence to support that. The primary goal of the smoke is to block the pheromone communication. I would say secondary to that, I think there's maybe a little bit of evidence to support the idea that they believe there might be a fire. So they're in a tree, the forest is on fire, and they may gorge themselves in open nectar and whatever resources they can grab because they may have to abscond. They may have to leave that tree in order to reestablish a colony somewhere else. I think there is some evidence to support that. But either way, the thing that I would be focusing on as a new beekeeper is smoker will help to keep them calm. Whatever the underlying reason is on the back end is really inconsequential. So recognizing that a lot of the communication with bees is taking place via scent, this could be or is one of the reasons why, let's say that you were going to attend a beekeeping workshop somewhere and they, you know, sent out an email, hey, we're looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Please don't wear any scented perfumes, sprays, scented soaps, shampoos, etc. If you know that you're going to be working with the bees, I think it would be a really good idea to just not, you know, just make sure you have no perfumes or heavy scented things on. Anything that could cause them to get agitated for any reason or even potentially a bit more defensive. And guys, don't use this as an excuse to skip a shower and be all gross, right? Don't say, well, Jeff said I need to be a dirty nasty because the bees don't like the smell of soap. Ladies, if you're listening, if your man tells you this, this is a lie. I never said that. Now, what I will tell you is there was a recommendation in the Discord room from a friend over there, Dr. Sasquatch soap. I have to get some of that. It looks really cool. The commercial is absolutely hilarious. Check those out if you get a chance. As Butthead once said, strong enough for a man, but maybe it'll work for Beavis too. Now moving on to movement and vibration. This is really important. Remember, bees are living in a tree. So if there is something climbing the tree to harass them, they're going to feel some vibration. If there is something that is trying to cut away at the entrance to their home, there's going to be a lot of movement. So reducing how much vibration you create with your actions and reducing a lot of like flashy movement when you have the hive open, just move slow, calmly, deliberately. When you have to remove a box, sometimes as you're separating boxes and moving things around, sounds and movements, these things are going to happen. Like one common thing that happens is as people are doing inspections, and you may be kind of fighting with a hive body. Let's say you have one hive body that is propolized and stuck to the one below it, and you're trying to get them separated. You're like kind of rocking back and forth. You can literally rock the whole hive back and forth. So it moves, you know, if it's up on a stand, the stand will lift up. I mean, I've had these things almost tip over because people are getting a little aggressive trying to separate a couple of hive bodies. So, of course, it'll move up okay. When it comes down, you have that shaking and that jarring. Same thing with you remove a hive body, then you go to put it back on, you slam it back down. You definitely don't want, you want to slide it on nice and easy, right? These are all things that you learn over time, so don't get too wrapped up in it. But just remember and be thinking that when I'm doing my inspections, I want to pay attention to not dropping. Like you pull a frame out. This is a great example. You pull a frame out, you look at it, everything's going great. You see what you want to see. Hold the frame and then just gently slide the frame back down and set it back into place. And you'll figure out little tricks that you can use, like hooking your finger underneath and pushing the bees out of the way as you're settling it down. You'll figure out a method that's going to work for you, but don't just drop the frame in there. And while we're talking about like things that make noise and vibration around a hive, at some point you're going to have to cut the grass around your hives. Now, while you might be calm and cool, your mower or your trimmer is not. Now, I've tried to be a cool guy and just like haul butt really fast past the hive. They always catch me, or at least they used to. I don't do that anymore. But put on a veil or put on some protective gear. You know, run by as quick as you can, get it knocked out, and then get out of the way. There's not a lot you can do. You can't calmly cut the grass unless you're doing it by hand. And of course, nobody's going to do that.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So more on the behavioral side of things, some things that you might notice when we talk about, you know, bees graduating up and becoming foragers, there's a cool thing they do. It's called orientation flights. And this is how a bee gets that hard-coded memory of how to get home. So what happens is she comes outside the hive, and you'll see her kind of fly near the entrance, kind of go back and forth a little bit, up and down. And once she kind of gets a feel, it's weird. In my mind, what I see is like this computer scanning thing, like like making a, like a full scan image of her home. But she does this like up and down and moves around. And then you'll see her start to do these little circles. And she'll be flying in a circle around the hive. And then it gets bigger circle and it starts to go higher and wider. And then that's it. It's a really fun, kind of neat thing to see. You'll see this whenever you install like a new package or a new nuke somewhere that you just put at your house. Or if you have, you know, 2 or 3 days of bad weather or some rain, you'll get these newly promoted workers that are now foragers. As soon as you get some nice weather after, you know, those events, it's really kind of a cool, fun thing to watch. Now, one question that had come up a few times, I figured I would go ahead and answer it while we're talking about this. As far as foraging bees, like what do they get? Like what do they go and retrieve? So if you have a bee that is out looking, for example, focusing on pollen, you know, they need more pollen. That bee is capable of bringing back water or nectar or pollen. You know, she can bring back anything, but she brings things back based on the feedback she gets in the hive. So she returns from a foraging mission, and there may be a worker, you know, doing a waggle dance and saying like, hey, waggle dances are super cool. I think I've got one posted on YouTube. If you need to find one or whatever, just message me or let me know. One of the gals in our Discord room posted one about a week ago. I think she caught one in her hive, but really pretty cool. It's a signal and a communication method that bees use to basically say, go this way and then turn right and go about this far and then turn left. And you'll see a flower over here. It's not that one, but like they can give full directions and it's really super neat. But that's one way that they use to communicate with each other about where resources are. But when they come back and they're like, all right, nurse bee, what do you need? And she's like, oh, we're kind of low on some nectar. they can change roles and go get different things based on the needs of the colony. They don't just go after one thing or just haphazardly go out and say, whatever I see, I'll bring. They go out with a purpose. I want to take a second and talk about like aggressiveness and defensive behavior. We know that Africanized bees are going to have a greater tendency to be a bit more aggressive and more defensive. People do keep them. They do keep and maintain them. I think it's kind of weird. I think if there was some great underlying reason, like let's say that these Africanized bees just produce massive amounts of honey and they were just mean and ornery, maybe. But I feel like if you knew that you had Africanized bees, like you're introducing some serious liability. But I just don't want to be around nasty bees. Like I really love the idea of going out with just a veil or even being able to, you know, pull a Randy Oliver and go out with, you know, no shirt on and just be hanging out with them topless. So I don't want bees that aren't going to want to, you know, be nice to me. But there's a lot of reasons, you know, why bees may become a bit more agitated outside of the Africanized bees. You can have nice, calm, you know, good-natured bees with good genetics, because obviously there's a big genetic component to it. Queenless hives tend to be a bit more agitated. If you are in a period of dearth, so there's no resources coming in, the bees can be a little edgy. Because they know, like, okay, well, we have a job to do. We need to be out foraging. We need to be finding things, and there's nothing here. I think that they also kind of know innately that the more time they spend flying, the shorter their lifespan. So if they're constantly out looking, and there's nothing out there, those bees are dying off, and there's no replacements, and they can't raise new brood without new resources. So periods of dearth can cause some agitation. Bad weather. So if you have a storm coming in, that low pressure is kicking in and they are tuned into that barometric pressure a little bit. You know, you go in, decide to do an inspection, or maybe you're poking around the hive. They could get a little agitated in that scenario. Also at times of year, and this could be in conjunction with a dearth, or it could be at a time of year when maybe it is a stronger colony, but you know, maybe you have the entrances completely wide open. If there's a period of a lot of robbing pressure, that can make them agitated too, which would be almost along the same lines of agitation as if you were inspecting them every other day. If you went in every other day and you're cracking the hive open, looking around, cracking it open, looking around, at some point they're going to get really irritated. They may even abscond if they get, you know, angry enough with you. So I definitely don't recommend over-inspecting. But the good news is if you make some bees mad today, just come back in a couple weeks and they're probably already dead or out foraging. So, you know, there's the bright side for you. So you know that under those circumstances, they may be a bit more agitated, but how do you kind of read the signs? How do you look at them and just say, what are we going to get today? Assuming that everything is nice and the weather's good and there's no real reason to suspect that they won't be treating you normally, a good warning sign is if you're near the hive or you're looking around the hive and they bounce off your forehead, that's a pretty good sign. I've had that happen so many times where I'm just in the area and they just boom and just bounce off my head. And I'm like, okay, clearly I can see you don't want me here. One of my favorite ones, I've shared the picture several times, is it was January or February, a warm day in the wintertime. And there was this one bee just standing right there by the entrance. I walked up. I was like 2.5-3 feet away. I'm like, oh, look at this little bee. She flew right up and stung me right between my eyes. Like just no hesitation. But yeah, the bouncing off the head, flying into your veil, you know, those things can be good early signs that they're not happy. The best thing to do, just stay calm, walk away. You know, don't run and flail your arms everywhere. We may or may not have a video in the Discord room posted with somebody flailing their arms running around their backyard. Okay, but if you do, you know, if you do have to work with a colony that you know is a bit more defensive, just, you know, stay on top of the smoke. You know, use that as needed. But also know when to walk away. I have had things happen where I'm doing an inspection and something goes wrong. Like maybe I pick, here's a good one I just thought of. I had a really productive, just massively productive, but not really the nicest colony. And I was putting them in nukes and I had like 4 nuke boxes stacked up. So it was like 20 frames vertically in groups of 5. And what they had done is they had merged the comb from, I think it was like hive bodies 2 and 3. they were just going like mad. I threw a nuke box on top with five frames, came back a week later, and it was full of honey. I couldn't believe it. And what they had done down below is they had drawn comb all the way up across the boxes and put a bunch of drone comb in there. And when I separated those two hive bodies, I tore apart like 30 or 40 drones. So there's all this open, you know, like pupating drones all over the place. And they went nuts on me. They were just going crazy. I tried smoking. There was nothing I could do. I ultimately just said, you know what? I'm going to put it all back together. I'm going to walk away. So I grabbed the hive tool, knocked off as much as I could so I wouldn't have to deal with it next time, put it all back together and just left. But they followed me. They followed me like 200 yards. I just kept walking as far as I could go. And I still had a couple of bees follow me. I just sat down in a chair and waited for about a half hour. They were not having it. So if you're in the hive and you do something really disruptive like that, they're not going to like it. So don't stay there and just keep stressing them out. Unless there's something specific that you have to accomplish. Don't stay there and just stress them out for no reason. Do something really quickly, whatever you got to do, as fast as you can, and just get out, come back another day. But don't force an inspection on a really agitated colony. Now, one thing that is kind of, I think, potentially debatable, I've heard different people say different things about this. I have a belief, and I'll give you my two cents, but I believe that bees are very in tune to what's interacting with them. I think if you show up and you are scared and you are agitated and you are on edge, I think that they will pick up on that energy. I think that just like they would say like a dog can sense evil or whatever, I think if you are putting off an agitated, angry, fear pheromone from your body, I think the bees are going to know that. I think that they will respond to your energy. Some people are like, oh, they only read bee pheromones. Okay, maybe they do. I'm not an entomologist. I don't know how you would measure that. Like, do you take a group of people and say, okay, I need you to pretend to be really scared or actually be really scared, or we're going to jump scare you right before you do an inspection. Like, I don't know how you test that one in the field. But I believe that the times that I've been calm and relaxed and really enjoying things, it has made things better. And I think the more that you can work towards getting yourself calm, comfortable, relaxed. So I'll give you, I got to be careful how I give this example. So there was a time where I would indulge in an adult beverage from time to time. And there were a couple of times where I was just like, we're just going to do this inspection. And I'd be like, no shirt, nothing. And like, I was relaxed and calm and everything was fine. And I never had any problem doing that. And then there would be a time like a week later where I've got my gear on, everything, and they're angry and they're bouncing off of me. And I'm like, how did I do that on that one day? And they didn't care. And like today, they're all angry. Or I had my friend was here visiting from out of town, and like her son was, I think he was like 15 or 16 at the time, knew nothing about bees, had never done a bee inspection, like knew nothing about it. And I was like, hey, you want to go out there with me? He's like, sure. He was wearing shorts and sandals. And I was like, well, I don't really have any protective gear for you. And he goes, well, will they sting me? And I said, well, I mean, if you're not messing with them, they shouldn't. But I mean, you're going to be right there holding things for me. And he's like, oh, I'm fine with it. He stood there, shorts and a t-shirt. Like he had no protective gear on, and I would hand something to him, and he was just relaxed and chill. Everything was great. They didn't mess with him at all because he was just super calm and relaxed. So I truly believe that the bees will respond to your presence, your relaxed kind of demeanor. So do what you can. And I know it's hard to just be like, hey, you know, those 20,000 things in there that can sting you, go be relaxed. Go, just do it. I understand that's not the easiest thing in the world, but take your time, try to have fun, and hopefully you'll settle into a nice rhythm and you'll get to experience kind of what I'm talking about with that comfortable, relaxed kind of interaction. Okay, so wrapping things up here, right? The bees, they're not unpredictable. They're not just going to, you know, start doing wild and crazy things to you unless there is something that is directly impacting their world. They're generally pretty consistent and how they respond, you know, from hive to hive. If you have a hive that's slightly more aggressive, they're probably always going to be slightly more aggressive. If you have a colony that's generally very calm and gentle, they will probably stay that way. But the trick is to just continue to observe them, pay attention to what you're doing, adjust your habits, your behavior, your interactions to accommodate them, learn as much as you can about each individual colony, keep all of your notes in order so that you know which ones have certain issues or maybe more temperamental than the other one. I think beekeeping is really not just all hands-on in the hive. I think there's a good balance between observing and kind of some intuition. And of course, a lot of patience with that too. You got to just be calm, relaxed. Nothing has to be done immediately. Take your time. I know we covered kind of a lot here, and honestly, in my mind, some of it was a little bit, I don't want to say all over the map, but there's so many different dynamics to bee behavior and their activity and how they do things and what they do. And what I've been trying to do is I have this habit of having an idea that I want to share with you. And then I go and I try to record it. And then afterwards I go, oh my gosh, I forgot these five things. So I've been trying to do better about keeping lists and better notes. But sometimes in that process, I lose a little bit of my flow, but it's really important. I want to get all the information to you guys. So I hope that is helpful and useful. But you can always go to Beekeeping for Newbies over there. There's a link to the Discord room. Jump in there, ask questions if you have them. We've also got some nuke plans, swarm trap plans, foul brood information. I'm trying to put new documents up there with some regularity just to have some resources up there if you need them. Bestbeekeepinggear.com. Got that stood up, like I mentioned earlier. I'm trying to, like, pretty much whenever I put out an episode, I'm trying to also put out some kind of a written version of that if possible, just to serve as a reference. So if you want to just read it, you don't have to necessarily listen to this guy here. And if you want to check out my WASP interaction, just go to youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies and you can see my fun little thing there with my mock inspection. All right, everybody, I think that's going to wrap it up. Have a great weekend. Take care. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.